friends. Every one of them, they're all our friends. Wonderful friends. Dozens and dozens, a regular throng. Simply besiege us and follow along, because they're all our friends. Half a ton of them, the line of them never quite ends. They come in groups and troops, invited or not. Uptown, downtown, right on the spot. I must confess, I guess, I worship the lot. Yes, every mother, son of them, every one of them, all our wonderful friends. I was born in Virginia, that's the state that'll win ya. If you got a soul in ya, ain't no southern frown. In the city of Norfolk, home of beauties and war talk, reckon you like it if you should strike at that doggone town. All our friends, half a ton of them, the line of them never quite ends. They come in groups and troops, invited or not. Uptown, downtown, right on the spot. I must confess, I guess, I worship the lot. Yes, every mother, son of them, every one of them, all our wonderful friends.
So long, Mary, Mary, we will miss you so. So see you go, and we'll all be longing for you, Mary, while you roam. So long, Mary, don't forget to come back home.
It's awfully nice of all you boys to see me to the train.
So long, Mary,
I didn't think you'd care if you should never see me again.
You're wrong, Mary. This reminds me of my family. On the day I left Schenectady, to the depot, then they came with me. I seem to hear them say,
and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, starting in just a moment. This is WHFR Dearborn, and we are here live at Henry Ford Community College, and we're going to have a very special guest on the show today, Lansing Mayor Virg Bonaro, and we're awaiting his arrival in just a moment. Let's get started with our theme song, Local News, Alternative Views. Let's dig deeper. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, Local News and Alternative Views. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM, and I'm joined in the studio right now at this moment by Dennis Reimars, our promotions coordinator and part of our WHFR news team. So good morning, Dennis. How was your morning?
It was excellent. Well, Jay, as you know, I was down at the Dearborn Farmer and Artisans Market. With Amy, we actually had a call into the station here, and it was just really so many people.
Yeah, unfortunately, it just closed 3 or 4 minutes ago, so this is sort of a little added reminder for people that missed it last week when it started, and today, that next week, Friday, again, from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., a lot of local merchants with fruits, vegetables, I assume some flowers are still on display.
Everything that you saw last week, which is everything you just mentioned, in addition to that, Henry Ford had a presence there. The Culinary Arts Program was the tent or the booth or whatever you want to call it, that where we could go for free samples. There's lots of free samples there, don't get me wrong, but as we found out last week, some of the samples actually have a little bit more substance to them. Like, well, you know me, Jay, I'm looking for a meal, right? But the Dearborn, actually the Henry Ford Community College Culinary Program had stuffed grape leaves and a spinach pie.
Oh, and I assume you had a few samples of those.
Jay, that assumption is correct. I also ran into, and we spoke on the air with Amy Dutcher, who's an administrative assistant here at the college, to the VP of Career Education. And she told us a little bit about a project produce that they're doing. Kearns Brothers, the construction company, donated a really cool little wagon. They painted pink. And people are putting produce there and actually cash, and they're taking this, as Amy said, it's a grassroots venture in which they're helping families that are in need, and they bring produce right to their table. So this is actually, they're cutting out the middleman, and they're taking everything extra and making sure it doesn't go to waste. Pretty cool.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, there's a lot of things still happening in Dearborn. Of course, we always recommend that you read your local Dearborn papers, both of them, in order to get the real story. We can't possibly cover enough stories, and today we are. And of course, those two papers are Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times-Herald newspapers, and we thank them always for allowing us to read some parts of their stories and to bring you up to date with some of our opinions about them, too, which are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, students, or administrators, but I hope so, personally. In any event, what's happening, here's the summary. We are waiting for Lansing Mayor Virg Bonaro. Hey, who's minding the city while he's down here? But anyway, he's actually running for the Democratic nomination for governor in the August 3rd primary. And his only opponent in the Democratic primary is Representative Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights. And so that's going to be an exciting thing. That's where the decision is made, folks. Bonaro or Dillon, August 3rd. Hope you can vote then. Hope if you're going to be out of town, hope you're going to get an absentee ballot, probably available somewhere after July 3rd or July 4th. Okay? That is very important. That decides who the Democratic candidate is going to be, and there's only two choices. So we're going to have a chance, we hope, to spend a good amount of the hour with him, and we're expecting him to arrive shortly. Our news director, Amy Powers, is waiting out front, and we'll escort him in Toot Suite. I remember when Mayor O'Reilly came in on May 28th on our show, Amy escorted him so fast he was out of breath when he sat down.
Actually,
here,
that was my fault.
Oh, you made him jog in?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I have really long legs, so therefore big steps. And oh, he's no. Just I know.
The mayor has very adequate legs. Come on. Okay. Don't want to cast any aspersions here.
All right.
Speaking of the mayor, here's something just kind of interesting in how the papers get it, and it goes back and forth a little bit until human beings straighten it out. We thought last Sunday that Dearborn's top firefighter, the acting chief, but deputy chief, in fact, was going to retire. That's what the story said in the Press and Guide. Times Herald, this last Wednesday, June 9th, indicated that his plans are changing, and in the Press and Guide, it indicates that he and the mayor met, and there was a misunderstanding during the interviews for the new fire chief whether or not the deputy chief would move to Dearborn. He's not a resident, and the mayor sort of wants all of his chief administrators to have residence in Dearborn. I think the deputy chief's family and himself, he lives in Wyandotte. Now, he pointed out during that interview, interestingly, that the the police chief doesn't live in Dearborn.
Right.
Even a bigger, position, theoretically.
Sure.
If your house is burning, you want the fire department there. But nonetheless, and they made some accommodation, for the police chief. But Mayor O'Reilly felt, well, we really can't consider you unless, you could move to Dearborn. And after all his years, I guess, living in Wyandotte with his family and everything, and Wyandotte's not that far away, but still. So he thought he was out of the running. And O'Reilly and him talked, and he's back in the running, apparently. They're going to re-interview him under the premise that he could move to Dearborn or that he doesn't have to. Why re-interview? Didn't he answer all the questions before? Now it's just his residential status that is the... I don't understand why the re-interview. Apparently he's a good person and has done a good job as the acting fire chief. And
maybe a formality, though.
Yeah, maybe. Starting all over, but I don't know how that issue, which is... Yeah, it's an employment issue, but I don't know how it would change his opinions on any of the, pardon the expression, hot issues in the fire department.
Oh, you're just getting going, aren't you?
Yeah, it's going to be a good day today. Look out for Nero.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good day for Jay.
crazy news here in Dearborn, and again, we're just sort of treading water a little bit. Bonero was expected to arrive in about 5 minutes, running for Democrat nomination for governor. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel, right around Fairlane Town Center, they've got, a new owner and a new name. They're going to be called The Henry.
What do you think of that?
Well, stupid. I even wrote a letter to The Henry Ford a few years ago when they renamed Henry Ford Museum Greenfield Village. They needed something that would encompass everything, including the Rouge factory tours.
Sure.
And that's all they could come up with, was The Henry Ford. And I said in the letter, Henry Ford was not a perfect person. In fact, even the foundation that raises money is called the Edison Institute. It's not called the Henry Ford Institute.
No.
Henry Ford was not very nice to workers and laborers. He fought unions, and his goons that he hired beat him up. He fought them in the 30s and the 40s into the 50s. He was anti-union, and he was a racist. He loved Adolf Hitler, and we got letters to that in regard to how Hitler felt about the Jews. And, everybody has their little character flaws, a couple things where they're not in the mainstream and so on and so on and so forth. But I thought to honor that whole undertaking as The Henry Ford, which didn't make sense to me, but what are you going to call it? Old time playground or something. They must have gone through 10 million names. And, right. And now to call the hotel Ritz-Carlton The Henry. Ew, why don't you just call it The Fred or The Bill? It's just stupid. Although it's memorable because it's so different.
Right.
And maybe that's what they're counting on, So good luck to them. We're not losing a hotel. We're just gaining a stupid name for one.
Are they lowering their prices at all?
That's not indicated in the story.
No.
And, they sort of lost status, I think, to Ritz-Carlton for a while, who wasn't doing great business either. But, okay, the Spirit Fest is going on in Dearborn Heights. It started this last Wednesday. It's going to go through Sunday. So have fun in the sun, dodge a couple showers maybe. But that's always big and a lot of activities, 5 whole days, and they're just getting started. There's going to be the weekend coming up today, tonight, and through Sunday. Dearborn Heights Spirit Fest, which is at the Canfield Civic Center.
That's right.
I remember Canfield, but I didn't know it was Civic Center last week. So everybody in Dearborn Heights knows where that is, I trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hakeem Fakhouri, gets an extension from the city of Dearborn for West Dearborn development plans of his, trying to get a plan together.
A bit of a surprise to me.
Well, it sat down, they negotiated with the mayor's office and the city attorneys, and they gave him another year till the end of this year. So it's actually not a year. He's got the rest of this year to get
months,
a right. plan together to present back to the council that they can either yay or nay. So he has, 6 months in effect. But
he must have said something that, you know what I mean? He must have been encouraging.
Yeah, as I read, the one of the big problems was in the story, the way the stories are written, was that the city wanted him to immediately, in the last extension that he didn't go along with, didn't even sign, tear down the three buildings on Michigan Avenue that are kind of derelict now. One of them was the former Vic Tanny's exercise studio, and there was a restaurant next to it and so on. And he said, I don't want to have to tear them down. I'm losing, I get some kind of tax credit or brownfield redevelopment from just keeping them there. So he didn't want to be under the gun of that requirement. And they took it out. They took that out of for the next 6 months. But he's only got 6 months. Of course, he's had, I believe, close to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
To work on this plan. And wanted to recommend, I think it's great, kids read comics this weekend at the Dearborn Centennial Library. That is and they had their first convention in Michigan out in Dundee, I think, somewhere like that last year. And this year they're coming to Dearborn. Of course, Green Brain Comics and all of our comic-oriented DJs and staff here will be over there. It's for kids. It's all free.
Yep.
Families welcome. They're going to have lectures, discussions. They might be better for like teenage kids that might be interested in drawing or becoming
an
animator.
I don't know. Rabbits and Bees is pretty excited about this.
Yeah. So it will be family friendly though, folks.
Yeah.
And a lot will be going on, and it's all free. A lot of actual comic book artists, writers, famous people that are currently writing on. I think I saw somebody's writing on Wonder Woman and Spider-Man. I mean, the ongoing comics series. And so these are nationally known people. Great fun. And couldn't find the exact hours. It probably at least 11 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. And that's at the Dearborn Centennial Library. Now it's a convention center, a conference. Interesting, isn't it?
Careful what we wish for, right?
Why not at the center? We talked about this. Why doesn't the center have some conventions and conferences? But anyway, Centennial Library is going to host that this weekend. So get down there with your family if you can. A great, especially if it's raining or really hot tomorrow, maybe you could go indoors to the Centennial. A lot of flooding in the area last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping to get a special interview with Mayor Dan Pletko. It's in the works. Ned Apigian, a perennial candidate for Dearborn Heights City Council, and he's going to be on the ballot out there again. But he's on our staff, folks, and not to plug him and his candidacy, but he and I hope to host in about 2 weeks a special one-hour-long interview with Mayor Dan Pletko, not just about the flooding, but their budget issues and how they're different from Dearborn. I, on this show, for some reason, we don't get to mention Dearborn Heights too much.
No.
I know Ned has a lot of strong opinions, and he knows the issues really well, so we should have a great discussion with that mayor.
We're becoming the mayor's station, aren't we?
Well, that's right.
That's
three
not
mayors
a
in about 6 weeks.
That's not a negative.
But we are local news
right.
and alternative views, and these people are local officials, and we should talk to them more, of course, as much as they're available.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Skupik, his editorial opinion this week is just fun to read always. Good writer, really knows Lansing. In fact, it was because of his editorials in the Press and Guide over the last, 6 months that I first became aware of Virge Bonaro and what he stood for and his interest in maybe running for governor. So Skupik has not endorsed him per se, but being in Lansing as a public radio journalist and doing a public television show once a week based in Lansing, he's probably met him several times, and he thinks he'll make a very good candidate in the fact that he has some new ideas and he has some strong opinions. In fact, he's been on Fox News a couple times. I went to the VoteVerge.com website today,
mm-hmm.
and some of the video clips that they have there are a few of his appearances. I think Fox gave him the title America's Angriest Mayor.
Really?
Now, that was when the auto companies 2 years ago were, Chrysler and GM, were going to go broke if they didn't get a government bailout, and the tenor of the country was not really in favor of doing that,
right.
even though we just got done bailing out Wall Street to $700 billion or whatever it took at the time, $300 billion, I think, up front. And so Verge got together a bunch of other mayors from cities that have large populations of auto workers, and he started appearing on these national shows and saying, you got to save the auto industry somehow, if only for the jobs and all the related jobs it means for this country, and of course, especially for Michigan. And so he got that title, America's Angriest Mayor, at that point in time. And I don't think he's quite as angry today, but there's a lot of stuff that people should be upset about and want to have to change. So I'm going to see what he suggests should be done in Michigan, the state with the greatest unemployment and the state, I think, with the greatest obesity, too. Is there a connection there?
We're the state with the greatest of a lot of things.
Foreclosures? I think we're still number one in foreclosures.
How about lakes, Jay? Let's think positive.
Well, I want to think positive. Thinking positive, you should also read Michael Albano's editorial opinion in Dearborn Press and Guy. We got to meet Mike in person as a representative for the Save Our Pools group last Friday.
He was at the farmer's market. Well, he was there today. Right. He was just showing up as we were leaving. I didn't get a chance to talk to
him. Okay. And, of course, he's constant cheerleader of Dearborn, but then again, Mayor Guido referred to himself as Dearborn's number one cheerleader.
Yeah.
Albino, I think, probably has that title now, although Mayor O'Reilly knows all the good things about the city, too, and Tefelsky and all the rest of the council, I'm sure. But so his editorial this week is entitled, Despite Tough Times, Dearborn is Wonderful.
Well, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's good to remind ourselves of what we have going on that's good. And he covers several issues there that we don't have time to cover today.
I handed that to you about the Sierra Club meeting on Wednesday at U of M.
Yeah. I want to mention this. If you want to do something about greening Dearborn in this area, even if you're not a member of like Sierra Club or any other local organization, ecology organization, a woman who is the local Sierra Club organizer, her name is Michelle Martinez, that came and spoke on our campus, and we've met and talked to her here on the Journal before. She is hosting that and trying to pull everybody together to get some sort of direction and sort of a consensus effort going to, I mean, the colloquial would be to green Dearborn faster even. So sustainability, and that's not a dull word, folks. It's very exciting. This event will be held next Wednesday night, June 16th.
6 o'clock.
From 6 to 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be an informally moderated roundtable discussion. They would like you to RSVP to M.A. Turtle. That's what it says.
M.A. Turtle.
Ma Turtle. That's just the acronym, you know, but maturtle@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. But it's open to all. So just go.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll find
out what's going on. Dennis is going to be our reporter in residence over there, and he's going to live there for 2 hours and take notes. But if no one shows up, nothing can be done. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Folks, if you're interested at all in the issues of keeping Dearborn green and free from pollution and moving into that future, which has to be saving us money on energy and also polluting the world less, then this is a great, could be potentially a great meeting if everybody goes. And, you know, we're all in favor of volunteer efforts around here, since WHFR is 98% volunteers, Dennis and the rest of the staff. Just myself and a couple of others get some part-time money, and I do mean part-time, to be around. So by all means, if you can make it, it's University of Michigan Dearborn, just south of Henry Ford Community College here, between Michigan Avenue and Ford Road, on Evergreen. Okay, and you know, it doesn't say here the building, but I bet it's in their civic center.
I bet it is too.
Isn't that terrible? It's not here in the the location is not here.
You know, and as soon as you go in the parking lot, though, in the main parking lot, it has this big a marquee, and mm-hmm. that usually tells you where all the events are. So I'm going to say, just go in and it'll be there.
It's called the Dearborn Environmental Sustainability Event, if you can remember that, hosted by the Dearborn Sierra Club Cool Cities Group.
Cool Cities. One other thing I want to bring up, I know you have your list there, but this is the last week of the, the last day of the International Buffet here at the 5101 restaurant,
okay.
That Thursday, June 17th, You know, you're familiar with this, aren't you, Jay?
Yes. I've been at several because it's right here next to our studio. So how can you miss all that great food?
Exactly.
You know? How can you resist?
Well, we have this last one is actually kind of cool because it's the taste of the world. The International Buffet has covered things such as Mediterranean cuisine, Eastern European. Well,
there's a chance to overeat.
Absolutely.
You know how many foods there are in the world? Is this going to be a representative sample?
Who are you talking to here? Definitely. But anyway, taste there. Of the world. Mm-hmm. Reservations are strongly recommended.
So popular, folks. Yeah, this is the special International Buffet here at Henry Ford Community College, presented by our culinary department. Always well attended. Everybody raves about them. The biggest groups of people from off campus arriving for these events that I've ever seen. That was last year and the year before.
Well,
so if you want to be in on this one, time again?
It's June 17th, so it's this Thursday from 11:15 to 1 p.m.
11:15 to 1, and the reservations?
You call 313-845-9651. I'll tell you what, included with this all-you-can-eat buffet are also desserts and beverages. So this is all-inclusive. This is a really, really good deal.
How much?
It's $12 per person.
$12, not bad for...
for all-you-can-eat,
keep eating, Dennis.
I'll tell you what, they wouldn't want me to come back.
It's really good stuff, too. Really? Say, it's made by those students. Yeah, but students under professional guidance, students that want to make a career out of this, so they better not mess up, you know?
They're being graded. They're being graded on your meal.
Yeah, so this is kind of and really do a great job, a great presentation, and fun will be had by all. The International Buffet coming this Thursday. Okay, so I'm looking also at what else here on my list.
Are you going to make it down to the 1X? You think you'll
get? Yeah, I want to get down there the second weekend. Tell us the dates. This is the Henry Ford Community College Theater Department 1-Act Play Festivals, two different weekends.
This is really cool. The first weekend is June 17th, this coming Thursday through Sunday. And the first weekend, part one, as we're calling it now on our promos, is actually they're spotlighting comedies. A Spot of Lunch by Neil Grant and Private Wars by James McClure. Mm-hmm. So that's Thursday the 17th, Friday and Saturday. Those are all 8 p.m. And then Sunday will be the matinee at 2. But these are not on campus, Jay. They're over at the Centennial Library.
Again, a center for recreational activities
now. It's a conference center, and it's also the auditorium.
Good for them.
All seats are $7. And
and the following weekend is different plays.
That's right.
The following weekend, if you can't get there the 17th, the weekend that starts on the 17th, and
the
following week, the 24th, that weekend, same dates, same times, 8 p.m. or 2 p.m. Sunday.
Right, and that's going to be, they're going to be the dramas. There's three of them. Ex-Miss Copper Queen on a Set of Pills, and that's by Megan Terry. Mm. Also, The Informer by Bertolt Brecht, and Recklessness by Eugene O'Neill. And actually, I've heard of all of these. So $7, just Centennial Library. Be there a little early. It starts at
8?
Yeah. I'm sorry, we just said 8.
Or Sunday at 2, yeah.
Try to get there a little bit early for that. And this is a very intimate setting, so it is important to get there early. By intimate, I mean it's not huge.
Again, we're waiting the arrival of our guest, Virge Bonero, and I saw our news director run in and back out. We don't know why she ran in and went back out, but maybe she got a phone call or something. Didn't tell us, but it's a long issue, but I've gotten a communication from the Campaign for Liberty, the Michigan Campaign for Liberty. And the Campaign for Liberty is a sort of a political action group that basically represents Ron Paul. A representative from Texas who ran as a libertarian for president back in, I think it was 92, in the early 90s. And then he became part of the Republican Party, and he's run for Republican nomination for president the last couple times. And he is not a teabagger, but he espouses libertarian views. But successful enough that his son, Rand Paul, I think in Kentucky, got a nomination. Won the nomination for the Republican Party to run for Senate, I think it was, and got into some trouble in a few side comments he made after that. And somebody said, he's a philosopher. He shouldn't run for elected office. That politicians shouldn't have a consistent philosophy. Well, I think that's terrible. That's a terrible thing to say.
I think the opposite is true.
Yeah. philosophy, if you study it, makes you more logical and more wise.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's the result, although there's a couple crazy philosophers out there. Nietzsche comes to mind. The study, but in fact, his background is similar to his dad's. Ron Paul was a baby doctor. Gynecologist, delivered thousands of babies before he got into politics.
Mm-hmm.
That's a connection with life, huh?
Sure.
And Rand Paul, I believe, is an eye doctor.
Okay.
That was his background.
I see.
But these are both careers you have to study hard for and practice hard for, and you know, many years of training. And so now he's entered politics. He's not real young. I think he's about 50. Is and Ron Paul closer to 70. Ah, Virge Bonaro is here. So let's open the door and invite him in, folks.
Mayor Bonaro, glad to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Come on in. Sit down.
Nice to meet
this
you.
This is Dennis. Okay. You've met Amy outside. Dennis. We're on live right now. They can hear us in the background, just to warn you. We're just going to go over some very general questions. I did a little outline for you. Amy's got some questions, too. We're just going to go back and forth, and we'll be out of here by 2 o'clock.
Great.
Is that good for you?
Yep.
Okay. And your assistant is?
Patrick.
Glad to meet you, Pat.
Sure.
That's why. Okay.
So I hope you folks were listening there and got the introduction. We have Virge Bonaro, the mayor of Lansing, now in the studio and sitting down, making himself comfortable at the microphones. And he's got his headset in place. So are you comfortable, sir?
I am. Thank
okay,
you.
Let me get your microphone. It was a mic test. Let's try that again.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
There we go. We can hear everybody
now. If it's too cold, you let us know.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, Amy wanted to get you a cold one, and I said, you know, college campus alcohol prohibition, but this is a great bottle of water, so hope he enjoys that. Obviously, it's big time for you. It's a big push. August 3rd is the primary campaign in Michigan, and it's between you and local Dearborn Heights resident Representative Andy Dillon for the Democratic nomination for governor. This must be really exciting to you, but you've had quite a career already and a lot of excitement in Lansing, certainly. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background. Family, education, career, 3 minutes, not enough time, obviously, but then we'll get into some issues, and we can talk about why people should consider voting for you.
Thank you. I grew up in Pontiac. My dad came here from Italy after the war, started a produce business, used to pick up fruit and vegetables at Eastern Market and deliver to the Detroit area, and my mother and father raised 5 kids. I'm the youngest of 5. I've got my mother's gift of gab, and whatever it is, and my dad's work ethic. My dad's a very quiet man. I went to Adrian College, married my college sweetheart, and she's a 20-year-plus public educator in Lansing. Today's the last day, officially the last day of school. Yesterday was the last day with kids. Today's the last day with teachers. So she's celebrating today, and I'm working. I've been a county commissioner, state rep, state senator, and now mayor of Lansing. Mm-hmm. And the mayor of Lansing has really been a coming of age. I think it's the greatest job in America, but also the toughest job in America to be mayor of a city. Like the mayor of Dearborn, it's about the similar size to Lansing. Mm-hmm. It is a tough job, but I'll tell you, when you're mayor, the buck stops with you. And it's different than just passing a bill. I was in the legislature. I know. A lot of times those guys think when they pass a bill that their job is over, that they've done something. When you're mayor, you know that when the bill gets passed, the real work really begins, because we are where the rubber hits the road. We're on Main Street. And we have to make it work. And that means answering the 911 calls that are life and death. It means filling the potholes. From the little to from the big to the little at the city level, the buck stops with me. And so I feel now I'm ready to make that transition. The state this is our 11th hour. People are hurting all around the state. I've never seen it so bad. The state I love is on the ropes, and I want to fix it.
Yeah, we're first in a lot of terrible ways right now, whether it's unemployment or foreclosure or, I think, obesity or...
Not eating green vegetables.
Right. There's a lot of good things, certainly here, and there's a lot of great potential. We still have a lot of those workers in the state who I'm sure are very anxious to work in maybe a green industry if there was those businesses established. So I guess the big question is here is, how can you turn things around? Governor Granholm has been added, a Democrat with a Democratic House. One of the big criticisms, of course, of Lansing, the legislature, is partisan politics. Republicans holding the majority in the Senate, and the Democrats can't seem to get together except in a crisis point to even get a budget approved for the next year. Let me just ask in general, how do you feel you can make a difference? Or what would be the approach that maybe, without necessarily criticizing Governor Granholm, who I'm sure has tried in her own way, how can you get that bickering resolved?
Well, Jay, I believe past is prologue. And so if you want to know what a person's going to do, I think you start by looking at what they've done. And I encourage people, you mentioned my opponent earlier, I encourage people to look very carefully at what I've done as mayor of Lansing in the city for the last 4 years. And I'll compare that. I'll hold that up against Andy Dillon's record as Speaker of the Mess. I mean, Speaker of the House.
Whoops.
Any day of the week. And I'm proud of the record we have in the city of Lansing. We have cranes in the air. We have $500 million in new investment. We have not bogged down into partisan nonsense. We get the job done. I've balanced five straight budgets on time and balanced without raising taxes, with using virtually no reserves. Every year I had council members that wanted to raise taxes and spend down the reserve. I cut $42 million in deficit. The city government is 20% smaller, the city bureaucracy. And yet I haven't lost one firefighter or one police officer. In fact, I have more police on the streets today than when I took office. It wasn't easy. It was hard. And I had to lead by example. I cut my pay. I doubled what I pay in health insurance. I gave up the city car. And by taking that kind of leadership, I was able to get, of course, sacrifice from everybody, and that's what it takes. We've all got to pull together. But I'm not interested in a minimalist view of Michigan. I want to grow this state. I'm ready. As mayor of Lansing, I feel a little bit like the guy in the engine room of a big ship. I'm down there putting fuel on the fire. But if the engine, if the ship's not headed in the right direction, we're not going to get there. We're not going to arrive at the destination. So I'm asking people to consider moving me up on deck. Let me get my hands on the wheel, and let's turn Michigan around. Let's make Michigan that number one that it was. The Michigan that I grew up in is sort of AWOL right now. The Michigan I grew up in is in jeopardy. The American dream is in jeopardy. I believe we are ground zero in Michigan in this battle to preserve the American dream that my dad came here from Italy for. We were number one. The Michigan I grew up in was number one in education, in industry, in arts, culture, you name it. Michigan was at the top. You mentioned the list that we're at the top of now: unemployment, home foreclosure, one-way trips out of state. That's unacceptable to me. I don't accept it. I have two daughters in school, one at U of M, one at Central, and I want them to be able to stay in Michigan and grow in Michigan. I'd like to one day know my grandkids and see my grandkids here in Michigan. I want economic opportunity in Michigan, and we've done it in Lansing. In the city of Lansing, we've diversified our economy. We have high tech, bioscience, IT, insurance, and we haven't given up on manufacturing. I hope you'll ask, and I'll be quiet and let you ask it, but I hope we'll get to the issue of manufacturing, because a number of folks in this race actually believe that manufacturing is a thing of the past. I've heard them say it. They think we ought to give up on autos and give up on manufacturing. I think manufacturing is absolutely crucial. It was a great part of our past and crucial to our future. It's an important point of departure between me and my opponents.
Amy, go ahead.
What was the incentive to for these companies to come in and bring this new investment in Lansing?
Well, I'll tell you, we used every economic incentive we had. And so I favor economic incentives.
Like what?
Tax credits, obsolete property rehabilitation. We used every state tax credit. We worked with MEDC. Jay asked the question, what did the governor do right? What did she do wrong? Well, I'm one who does not believe that the MEDC did everything wrong. Just because they had that one mistake with the guy, and they hadn't given him any money, but people, so the Republicans have tried to take advantage of that and blow up the MEDC. We better be darn careful, because you don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg. We are in a tough global economy today. We have to compete. I don't like the global economy, and there are some things I intend to fight to change as governor. We need fair trade, not free trade. But the fact is, right now, we have to compete on a global basis. We're not competing. It's not Lansing versus Ann Arbor. It's not even Michigan versus Ohio. This is Michigan versus the world. And so we have to make Michigan the number one place in the country to do business. That means jobs. And we were able to do this in Lansing. We leveraged our assets. You know, I'm at one of the assets in this region right here with U of M Dearborn. Our university system is one of the great assets that still internationally people come here because of our great university system. So we have to bolster that. We have to make sure it's not weakened. But of course, that also sits on the foundation of K-12 education. If your K-12 education is crumbling, you're not going to be able to maintain great universities for long. And we are in jeopardy. And the legislature helped put us in jeopardy. And there, you know, my opponent has a lot to answer for. When I was in the legislature, we were funding education. We were balancing budgets on time. The thing has gone to pot. And, you know, for him to come up now and say, oh, elect me governor and I'll fix this. Elect me governor and I'll do that. Well, wait a minute. You had one of the key positions in state government for the last 4 years. Let's look at what you did with it.
Yeah.
You were just up at the Mackinac Policy Conference, and one of the things that came out of that was U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich mentioned making Detroit a tax-free zone. In addition to that, would you support a bailout of Detroit if they went into some type of receivership? Or
well,
how would you address that?
Well, let's not put the cart before the horse, Amy. Now, Detroit has some incredible assets. and it is still an incredible city with great potential. There are severe challenges there. We now have new leadership in Detroit. Let's not sell that new leadership short. We have new leadership in the mayor's office and on the council, and I've met with all of them, and I'm impressed with what I see. And I've also been impressed with how they, so far, how they've acted. I mean, you got a city council that is actually, I mean, the mayor proposes a bunch of cuts, and the city council says, we don't think you've cut enough. And so that tells me they're headed down the right road, and I'm enthused about that. I'm enthused about the spirit in Detroit, the entrepreneurship, the faith. You know, they are ready to go. I mean, they are tough. The Detroiters are tough, nothing if not resilient, and we're going to work with Detroit in a proactive way. So I'm not waving the white flag at all on Detroit or any of our major cities. You know, one of the problems we have, Amy, is we haven't invested in our cities. You know, our cities, if you think about this, this is a fact. The fastest growing states have the fastest growing cities in them. And that's no coincidence. Cities lead the way. The cities are the face of the state, whether we like it or not. You think about when your friends travel and they come back. Like if your friends go to Chicago for the week, you say, hey, what'd you do this week? Oh, we went over to Chicago. How many of them say we went to Illinois? You know, people identify by cities. And in the same way, Michigan is in many respects defined by Detroit. And even if you live in the suburb, or if, say, Flint, if you live in Grand Blanc, you know, you go out of state, you go somewhere else, you say, oh, I'm from Grand Blanc. Where? Flint. Mm-hmm. You know, you are married to the city. We are married to the city. We will sink or swim with our cities. Our cities need to be the hub of the wheel instead of the hole in the donut. And if we think we're going to survive by building walls instead of bridges, we're kidding ourselves. And that's what Michigan's economy, that's part of what Michigan economy is suffering from. Because for years, we divested ourselves from our cities. We tried to divorce ourselves from the cities, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Empirically, we know it because the fastest growing states have the fastest growing cities. Young people want to go where cities work, where cities are thriving. They want to go where there's economic opportunity, where there's excitement, where there's a sense of place, and where there's public transportation. So we have a job to do in Michigan.
In a week after next, the U.S. Social Forum, a national conference, is coming to Detroit, downtown Detroit. We're going to be trying to cover some of the events there. The subtopic or the theme of that is how to save Detroit. And that's a lot of activist groups, a lot of nonprofit groups, and there's certainly a lot of opportunity for some initiatives there. But usually it means if you want to help the cities with, and as you know, and even in Lansing it's probably true, declining property values, revenues coming in from property taxes are declining. But you still want to give incentives for certain kinds of industries to get them started and to get them moving. I guess the question is, you know, how do you do that? The only one that I'm familiar with as a telecom professor down here for a long time is the Michigan incentive for filmmaking, and that's pretty high, 45% or higher sort of tax credit rebate at the end of the first year of production. I think it's second highest in the U.S., and that has brought a lot of film productions, Clint Eastwood a couple years ago, Gran Torino, and others to this area. And, of course, those companies, you know, they do buy things and they do put money into the economy. But it's awfully expensive up front to keep that going. At a certain point, there may be payback. So where, I guess the big question is, and maybe even constant question in your mind, too, politically, how do you find the money for some of these projects when revenues seem to be declining?
Well, that's related to a question that Amy asked about tax incentives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we our tax system in some respects is antiquated and isn't working. But we in Lansing used every tool available, every tax incentive on the books, and there are some good ones, and there's even some new ones, like with the new market tax credit and so on, to try to incentivize the redevelopment of existing properties. You know, when you talk about, people like to talk about the cost of economic incentives, but when you look at an old factory, a dilapidated warehouse, or an old factory that's sitting there, aging in place, falling apart, tearing down the neighborhood, tearing down the property values, which you mentioned, I just, as a mayor, and I've talked to other mayors about this, you know, we're on the front lines. We know what that dilapidated building does to a community, what it does to the psyche, what it does to potential investors who drive by and think about investing. It is a deterrent to investment. So my view, if, you know, how are you going to attract somebody? company into Detroit? How are you going to attract an investor to take a chance where there's the infrastructure is dilapidated? If you've got an investor willing to come in to an aging city to deal with the problems, to deal with obsolete property and so on, we've got to make it worth their while. So I believe that Newt, she asked about Newt Gingrich, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. And I think Newt had a real point when he said about the taxes. Because if you take a building or a warehouse that's decrepit and falling apart, it becomes a magnet for crime. It tears down property value. So if I give that to somebody for 12 years where they don't have to pay taxes, but they bring in jobs and people are working and paying taxes and being productive and they're adding economic activity and vitality to the city, that is a win. That is a win. And I've talked to other mayors. We know it. And so we have to update the tax system. That MBT, the Michigan business tax, what was the single business tax, is a job killer. My opponent knows it's a job killer, and he helped create it. Yeah. And he says if you elect him governor, he'll fix it. Well, I say we ought to promote people who have been doing the job. You don't make somebody governor just so they can fix their mistakes. We've got a lot to do in Michigan, but we can get it done. This is a beautiful state. I've been all over the state. I just got back from a UP tour. Incredible. But those people, too, need jobs. We need jobs and economic opportunity. That would fix so much of the problems we have, the brain drain, the talent leaving our state. Our young people want economic opportunity, and we can do this. We have to become the number one place in the country to do business.
So we need a new business for tax for businesses, you're suggesting, a new way to plan that. Let me just ask, since we've had a couple representatives on the show from the Michigan Fair Tax people, are you familiar with that proposal?
Somewhat. I'm not prepared to say yes or no on that. I mean, we really have to study the entire system. What I know is we have to fund priorities, you know, and I'm willing to put together a commission and talk about, you know, we have to have fairness, we have to have equity, we have to have predictability.
Well, I want to just tie into that. Obviously, they've discovered that unless the legislature votes like two-thirds of whatever it takes to get it on a ballot proposal, a major change in the tax system can't happen because of our state constitution right now. There could be, I guess, a petition from the people themselves to get an issue on the ballot for that change, and legislature has had the opportunity to do that the last couple of years for Michigan Fair Tax, hasn't gone there. I'm not going to try to educate anybody on it, but although I am kind of familiar with it, and we had a good discussion about it before, but I noticed even Governor Granholm has come out in endorsing the Constitutional Convention proposal that's going on the ballot in November. Do you think that's an opportunity to make some significant changes in the state? It's risky. It might not happen. But we really haven't had a review of our Constitution and some major issues besides the taxation system, which would include business tax, of course, too. Term limit issues. People suggested we get rid of term limits. You probably left the legislature because of term limits. I'm just guessing. Were you at the at the cutoff?
No, weren't.
Andy Dillon is. He needs another job
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
So.
Thank you. No, I operate on the assumption.
We didn't have term limits. He could stay in Dearborn Heights. See,
I operate on the theory that a rolling stone gathers no moss, so I just continue to move on.
Okay. But a part-time legislature was proposed. These are bigger ideas than what can usually be done within the regular legislature. It's a constitutional reform issue. So
there's a number of issues.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm opposed to the Constitutional Convention. I think it would cost a lot of money, and it would be a diversion from fixing the main issue, which is the economic crisis that we now face. I think we've got to have all hands on deck. We've got to focus on this economy. And if there are items in the Constitution that are a deterrent to economic growth, then I think we can pick out two or three or even four. If there are key things that are an obstacle to economic growth and job creation in Michigan, then by all means, I think the governor would a governor could point that out, and I think the people would respond to that. But when you talk about, I mean, there's estimates of $20 to $40 million it would cost. You'd have paralysis on a number of issues. We can't afford that. We need action now. So my argument is, after we get our economic house in order and we get our priorities straight, and we're growing jobs, that's the time to put together all of the infrastructure that would be necessary to redo the Constitution. I really believe people could take it in small bites. You know, we could take small bites at the apple.
Yeah, a lot of conservatives who are suspicious of government anyway, they point out that the you don't just vote for constitutional reform, you're voting for a whole process that gets a number of people, I assume, sort of party lackeys, or Governor Granholm said she'd be glad to run to be a delegate. Like 180 to 200 people, something like that, would have to be elected over this two-year period of time and then debate. And so my concern is, as a teacher, as a sort of educated person, it'd be nice to have people elected, but it's just not pragmatic, who actually are experts. Some college professors and maybe people that have really brilliant ideas that they'd like to have a forum for. And that's probably not going to happen in terms of, I'm supporting what you're saying, is the question is not whether or not we can afford it and the time it takes to get some things done, because it does take 2 years, and then the voters have to say yay or nay to the whole package, in fact.
That's why, to me, it's almost a sidebar discussion compared to what we're facing right now. I've been all around the state. People are hurting. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their homes. In many cases, they're losing their hope. We have got to respond now. This is a crisis in Michigan. It may be a recession in other states. It's a near depression here in Michigan.
It's a short-term question. It's also about funding and taxes. The budget, I don't think, is balanced yet for next year. The legislature hasn't worked that out. They cut. Do they tax?
Well, you know what, Jay? What we need is leadership. What we need is leadership, bold leadership, and that's what I've provided in the city of Lansing. I've outlined three steps we could do with the economy right now. I'm about to outline my Michigan Main Street agenda, which will be my economic plan for the state, so everybody will know exactly what I'm going to do when I'm governor. But I've already talked about a few things. One is the state bank proposal. One other state in the union has done it to ease the credit crunch and to get loans to small business so they can grow jobs now to create the Michigan Bank, Michigan State Bank, like in North Dakota, and invest in ourselves. Why are we sending hundreds of millions, literally hundreds of millions of dollars to Wall Street when they have redlined Michigan? They are not investing in Michigan. They will not invest in Michigan. And yet we're sending our hard-earned tax dollars to Wall Street firms who are then investing our money in businesses in other states. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely stupid. We can turn that around and invest in ourselves and grow our business, lift ourselves by our bootstraps with the money that we have. Number two, we can create foreign investment zones. Lansing is one of only three cities that has been approved to do this. It's called EB-5. You can check that out, EB-5. It's a federal code, and we're one of only three. I would, as governor, promote in every one of our struggling cities to have a foreign investment zone, to bring foreign dollars back here. You know, we've helped create millionaires and billionaires in China and India, all over the world, thanks to the spending here, and because of the products that are allowed to come into this country. Now we have an opportunity under EB-5 to become a magnet for foreign investment and bring foreign dollars back into this country, and we're not even utilizing it. And number three, I would do some element of what Newt was talking about. I would do a Michigan manufacturing zone where I would lower taxes. I would provide an incentive for businesses who are going to make things in this state and take an old property, an obsolete property, and rejuvenate it and begin to make things in Michigan. Essentially, it would be make it in Michigan for free. If you're going to make something and produce and put people to work in high-end manufacturing jobs, we want you to do it here in Michigan. Those are just three things that we could do that would make a huge difference. And in fact, I'd put those three things up against the entire economic plan of Mike Cox and some of these other guys that talk about they've got a plan. You can read it all up, all 62 pages, and it amounts to nothing. It's not just gobbledygook. You add it all up, and my three things that I've just given you will do more to stimulate our economy.
We're listening to Virge Bonero speaking very quickly. And folks, if you're listening to this hour on your MP3, you can always rewind it, you know, and play it back. We cannot provide a transcript because no one here can type that fast. But he's got a lot to say, and he's going to be with us only 10 more minutes this hour. His website, which we'll mention again later, is VoteVirge.com. And we've been looking at it here among Amy and Dennis and I. And it's very clean design, very easy to find out what's happening, easy to volunteer, contribute, whatever. Usually websites don't happen that good.
Well, thank you very much.
For anyone. It's a major way to get your word out. Noticed in the Detroit News June 1st that a poll showed that you're leading in the race for governor right now, although name recognition for you and Andy Dillon statewide is still pretty low, but you know, there's the primary, and then there's the campaign between August and November still to go. But congratulations anyway.
Well, it varies from day to day.
Yeah.
You know, you're right that our name ID is low. I'm not a millionaire. You know, I'm not like the nerd who can go on TV but with my own money. We're raising money. We're building a campaign, and I encourage people, if you like what I stand for, and you can go online, you can give online as well, to be a part of this campaign. This is a people's campaign. This is not a corporate campaign. And even though I'm proud of some of the union endorsements, it's not a union-run campaign. It's run by the people, and I'm proud to have the support of the UAW and the AFL, but I also have a lot of business support. And when I ran for re-election as mayor, I was endorsed by the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce and the State Chamber of Commerce because I'm able to bring business and labor together and accomplish growth. And this is why I say a lot of these guys who are running for governor talk about doing this and doing that, and basically all they've done is legislated and passed bills. I mean, you look at Hoekstra. He's been in Congress. They wouldn't know a balanced budget if it hit him in the head. And now he's going to come in and run state government. On what grounds? Based on what? I have run the city of Lansing. I encourage people to look at my record. I was reelected with 63% of the vote last year. And believe you me, you don't get reelected as mayor unless you've done the job. Several mayors, in fact, some who I knew, were thrown out in the last election because we're where the rubber hits the road. We're on the front lines. I'm in the trenches every day with my people. And I've been busy in the city of Lansing. And so look at the city of Lansing. Look at the growth that we've accomplished. Look at the budget that we've done. That's where it begins.
Let me just ask a question. You didn't mention Lansing. Michigan State University, very large enterprise and obviously creates jobs for a lot of people. It's technically in East Lansing. So you must have relations with the university and a lot of things happen because of them. But that's not something that's technically part of the Lansing mayor's job or the city of Lansing.
One other thing I was saying to Amy, Jay, was, we've leveraged our assets. And you're right, Michigan State's not technically in the boundaries of Lansing, but we didn't get caught up with that. We created a regional economic development entity called LEAP, Lansing Economic Area Partnership, where Luanda Simon, the president of MSU, is involved. Hmm. And so we worked together to leverage the assets. MSU is a huge asset to the city of Lansing. A lot of their employees live in the city of Lansing. They're our residents. And then what we've been able to do is to, when I say leverage assets, for example, our universities are seedbeds of incredible knowledge and experimentation and entrepreneurship. You know, they are wellsprings of the economy, our great universities. And so what we need to make sure is that when new ideas come out of the lab and are prepared to be commercialized, to go to the market, we got to make sure that those things land in our state. We've been successful in Lansing in getting them to go from the lab at MSU to landing in Lansing. And so we have to, as a state, make sure that the great ideas that are coming out of U of M and out of MSU and out of Wayne State and out of all of our universities are commercialized, are capitalized, and land in Michigan instead of going to the West Coast or to the East Coast or even to China.
I just wanted to follow up with the topic of education, near and dear to my heart as a college professor for 40 years, just retired, but still can't get away from the campus here.
Congratulations.
And my daughter is a teacher in the Southfield Public Schools, one of the few not laid off that was just announced today. There's layoffs in Dearborn and all around Detroit's going through a crisis, emergency economic reorganization. Your wife is currently a principal in the Lansing area of a school system. I keep hearing a proposal, and some very intelligent people around here talk to me and say, yeah, we should cut the pay on all those public employees. Just cut their pay, cut their benefits way down. I said, wait a minute, some of those are teachers. It's the future of our country is the kids. Is it just a pay issue? I've read some places merit pay doesn't necessarily work. What do we do here? I mean, we have to keep the best and the brightest as well as the really smart and energetic going into teaching, of course.
Well, earlier you heard me say, Jay, that I don't accept a minimalist view to Lansing, right, to Michigan. I don't assume that it's going to be a death spiral, that it's going to be less. We've got to expand the pie. And so this notion, I heard Mike Cox in the debate up at Mackinac talk about how state workers should be cut down to $40,000, that in Lansing they make too much, in Michigan they make too much. Here's a guy making over $150,000, as attorney general. His wife, who's a county commissioner, I'm not attacking anybody's wife, but she's a public official. She's making $80,000 for a part-time job on the Wayne County Commission. And yet he's talking about full-time state workers and teachers who work their butts off ought to be happy with $40,000. Give me a break. You know what? I'm sick of it. You know, I don't accept that we've got to take more out of the hide of working people. We've got to expand the pie. You're absolutely right that we need qualified people in teaching. We need to attract qualified people. You know, my dad's 85 years old. He has a modest pension from GM, and Wall Street wants it. Wall Street begrudges him that pension. They think in order to balance the books, we ought to go after pensioners and retirees. My dad earned that pension. He never rested a day in his life. He worked all his life, and he earned a modest pension, which he spends in Pontiac, Michigan. These guys on Wall Street who can't get enough, who get bonuses and bailouts, and they take our money, and then they want to cut the middle class. All you're doing is cutting the middle class, shrinking the middle class, which in the long run is a minimalist view. It's a downward spiral.
We only had time probably for one more question, then we're going to let you have about the last couple of minutes to sort of summarize why people should be voting for you in the primary for Democratic nominee for governor. Amy, go ahead.
Well, this is a quick one. Where do you stand on stem cell research?
I'm 100% for it. It's one of the things that distinguishes me from my opponent. He says he's for it, and yet it must be a recent change of mind because he opposed it when it was on the ballot. And I worry about a governor, who would take out steps. He would be pressured by his group, Right to Life, to try to stop it. I'm 100% for it, and I believe that there's, of course, great medical reasons to pursue that research, that we can solve chronic diseases down the road. We have to be doing the research, and then there's great economic reasons as well. The states that are doing it, the universities that are leading the way in stem cell research, those are big bucks and big dollars with researchers and scientists coming to those areas.
Can I just toss out a couple names? Freeman Hendricks, Ken Cockrell, Dennis Archer, Representative Alma Wheeler, Jeffrey Feiger. Are any of those names being vetted for your running mate for lieutenant governor?
Well, at this point, I mean, some
maybe
of those,
a little too soon.
Yeah,
but it
would be premature at this point. I'm going to have to right now focus on the election and the primary. So, those are all some wonderful folks there.
Okay, and here's a silly question, just for me, or just a statement or whatever. We were interviewing Mayor O'Reilly of Dearborn a couple weeks ago here in the show, and we talked about the auto industry and so on, the crisis there, and I happened to mention, I shouldn't have done it out loud, that I'm one of the people that have a deposit on a new Nissan Leaf. They may be available by the end of the year. They're all electric cars. And he said, oh, no, don't do that. I'll get you a Ford Focus Electric in January. Well, I talked to my dealer, as I told him, they're not going to be available till next fall. Ford was 2 years behind what they promised for a hybrid, and they've been a little late in getting into the electric bandwagon. What can we do for companies? Now, Ford is not really just a Michigan company. They're an international company, really. But can we... I'm trying to think, what kind of incentives to get even GM, which is government sort of owned or heavy control that should be applied to get into these more energy efficient directions? Is it just tax incentives? Or of course, there's a big rebate. Somebody said, well, how much is the electric car going to cost you? I said, well, $30,000, but there's a federal rebate of about $6,000 or $7,000 that you get. So more people making those kinds of good decisions. How do we work at that level? I mean, the human beings, how do we make them, encourage them? Does government have a place in those individual encouragements to, let's say, go green?
Jay, I don't want to get preachy here, and this will be my 2 minutes, I guess. We'll just answer this.
Yeah.
I think that the auto companies, you know, this is our auto companies today. This is not your father's automobile company, to steal a line from Oldsmobile. These auto companies today are changing. Were they late to the game? We could debate that. You know, we could argue, could they have done more? Should they have been more on top of the game? I'm sure that's true. But right now, they are changing rapidly. And you look at what Whitaker is doing at GM. He is reinventing the company. Ford is making incredible strides. So, and now I got to wave the flag. And I got to tell you,
he's got a pin on his jacket, by the way, folks.
And the pin isn't there just for looks. I'm a proud American. My dad came here from Italy for a better life, and a better life is what he got. And he goes back to Italy, and he loves the old country. But I'll tell you something, he loves coming back here, and he always comes back, and he chooses to live in America. And I choose to be here and to raise my family. I'm a proud American, and I'm an American first, before I'm a Democrat or before I'm anything else. And we need to be Americans, and we need to stand up for American jobs. If there's one thing that we should have learned in this economy, you got to make something. We have given up. We this notion that Wall Street has sold to us, that we should just never mind where it's made and buy from the world, it's bull. It is absolute bull. It matters where production is. We put the P in GDP. That's what made this country great, gross domestic product. It wasn't buying things. It wasn't consumption. It was people making products that were wanted here and around the world. We were the standard. And we can be again. But by God, we got to take some pride, and we've got to be willing to invest and take a leap of faith in our domestic producers. So I'm not just talking to you, Jay, but I'm talking to everybody out there who's thinking about buying a car. If it means waiting an extra month, putting that old beater, keeping it going in order to get the American car, please, please give the American company a chance. And don't tell me that the other companies, that it's made in Kentucky or it's made there. No. The domestic company, it matters. The supply chain is American. When you look at the jobs behind an American product, even if the American product was made in Canada, the supply chain is American. It's 60, 70% American jobs. It matters. It's millions of jobs across this country, and not just in cars. I know it's hard to find things that are made American, but I bought a pair of shoes the other day. I had to pay more money to buy American. But we got to start looking at that. We've got to keep our neighbors employed.
Every decision we make matters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Virg Bonero, thank you so much for coming today and being on the new WHFR Journal on WHFR.FM. Where are you going to be locally? You're here today. You probably already had some stops at big time radio or TV stations, or you got some other schedule. But to us, it is.